Word up, word of mouth Wednesday. We're back here for another word of mouth Wednesday. This is Daniel Libby, and this is our show for Wednesday, September the 29th, 2010. And we've got a big show lined up tonight with back into the topic of the G20, one of the top topics we've been talking about on the word of mouth Wednesday. And tonight joining us is a employee of Toronto Transit and a famous case of being arrested during the G20. Elroy Yao is in the studio live to talk with us about his experience with the G20 and then what's been going on since the G20 in terms of all the stuff going on with the G20, and we're going to be getting into more info on that in the show. We've got some audio clips, and then also we've got a clip from the Manifesto Festival, So Much Things to Say event that took place on the weekend. So we got all that and more coming up on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. Stay tuned here on CKLN because we got more coming up. And we'll be right back, and stay tuned for more here on CKLN 88.1 FM. Word up, word of mouth, Wednesday, word up. Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here, and joining us here in the studio is our first guest of the show, and he is an employee of the TTC, the Toronto Transit Commission, or commission worker that was arrested for going to work. Well, we're going to get all this story of what happened at the G20 and what's been going on since, and I'd like to welcome to the show today, joining us in the studio, Elroy Yao. Hello.
Hi.
Hey, yeah, thanks for joining us here today on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. And I guess maybe could we just start from the beginning? I know you were arrested at the G20, but I guess how did it all happen?
Well, from the beginning, I was walking down in full TTC uniform, just down Queen Street around 101 College. Police blocked off that whole area with their bikes, and there was no riot gear. It was just police officers in uniform. When suddenly it looked like I wasn't going to be able to get to Queen's Park, so I started to walk back to college so that I could call my dispatch center and tell them what was going on. As I was walking back towards college, I was nailed hard onto the ground, so hard that my glasses and my watch broke, and a man was on top of me, wrestling me down, and I was fighting back. And he stopped, and he said, "Stop resisting arrest, stop resisting arrest," and I was like, and I was like, "Get off me. Like, you know, who are you? Get off me." And another one of his friends joined and held me down. And that's when they identified themselves as police officers. These were guys that were in normal clothing. No police uniform, no police ID, no police number, nothing. It was men in jeans and a work shirt. There was the other cop looked like a homeless person, a big, unkempt beard, plaid shirt. And they proceeded to hold me down harder than they needed to for, like, I'm 5'10", 155 pounds at that time. And they used a lot of force to hold me down, cuff my back, cuff me in the back, and shackled my legs, and dragged me across Queen's Park in front of supervisors and transit constables that were waiting for me. They took me to the grassy area of Queen's Park, put me down, took off my belt, my shoelaces, took all my watch, my glasses, anything metal, anything I could hurt myself or somebody else with, as they were berating me and my job, how they're always the first to help, and now I'm here fucking them and screwing them over and participating in these events. I should know better than to stay clear of this area. And I told her, I actually don't get a choice where I work. TTC tells me where to work. So I can't avoid the area. Mm-hmm. So they put me in a paddy wagon next to another, put me in a paddy wagon, and I asked through, I asked through the little holes to the arresting officers. Actually, the arresting officers, it was to them, it was a big joke. They were laughing at it. They were laughing, saying, hey, we got a TTC guy. We got a TTC guy. Hey, who wants to take a picture with him? Who wants to take a picture with him? And it was a joke, and I couldn't believe it. And I got in the paddy wagon, and I asked a police officer. I can't remember which one. I couldn't see which one. Mm-hmm. There's a guy, and I told him, there's a guy in a white shirt. He should be where he's a transit supervisor, or there should be two transit constables. Can you grab them and tell them? Because I got to tell them I can't go to work.
Right.
Within 5 minutes, they came. He asked me for my badge number, who I am, where I'm supposed to be, and pretty much told the cop, this guy is an employee of ours. We have a two-way radio. You can talk directly to our control center, and they can clarify everything. I never heard an answer back, and I figured that, you know, probably 20 minutes or so. I was in the paddy wagon, 15, 20 minutes. They opened the doors and let me out, and I thought everything was fine, and I was clear. They put me in a bus with a few others. One of them was a reporter, as well as other people that were bleeding and everything else and bruised up. And the bus started to move about 20 minutes later, and I realized I was not going home for the night, and I was not going to work.
This was a TTC bus, or this was a...
This was a Toronto police bus. It had cells in it and benches in it.
Whoa. And were these officers that you're mentioning that arrested you that were in plain clothes, were you able to ever find out what if they were Toronto police, or do you know what...
I have images of them through YouTube. One of them that berated me the worst was Scary Lady. She's quite popular on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I've got pictures, not pictures, but YouTube footage of the other two cops, and it'll be up to the Toronto police to identify. They should have been Toronto officers, though.
Right, and okay, so this is arrested on your way to work, and then what, okay, I guess, just going on from the story, what happens after, or where do they take you after you're in this bus?
During the whole event, like as soon as I got put down on the ground and they arrested me and was taking me to Queen's Park to secure me for, I guess, Eastern Avenue, I told them my story and that I'm working and everything else. Their answer was a very sarcastic, sure. All those guys in black shirts and black hoods, they're all going to work too. They're all honest people. Don't worry. Very sarcastic. This is our police force for the day.
Whoa. And okay, so what was it like then when they took you to?
We went into Eastern Avenue, and there were cells, and from inside the bus, you can already hear people yelling and screaming. There may have been 10, 15 cells in this one area, and I figured, that's a pretty big facility, because the bus literally drove right in. So they took us out one by one, slowly, took off any additional stuff we had, and then they put us in the cell. There was about 30, 35 people in my cell, a few which I still keep in touch with, actually. Another interesting point is that one of the cops was threatening me, saying that my weapon, that I am armed for G20, and I was going to cause harm, because I had a metal weapon with me, which was my transfer punch. So the best answer to tell him was, you know what, with this, the best I could do is give you a free ride.
Mm-hmm. this is why your story is very unique, because you're the only person that I've heard of. I've heard of a lot of people that were arrested, you know, detained illegally or with no reason given or for no reason at all. But you're detained on your way to work in uniform. And this is why, you know, this is something that's a bit strange, because I know that the police officers, with a lot of them that are in uniform, you know, they had to go through, I guess, you know, there was a lot of protesters yelling at them and stuff. I saw that for sure. And so I know that, like, it just seems like the general public has this, certain people in the public have an attitude towards, like, people in uniform. You know, maybe even just going beyond the G20, like, as your work as a TTC, have you faced, as a TTC worker, have you faced, like, harassment from the public or anything like that?
Have I faced harassment in regards to G20 or harassment from the public?
Yeah, just in general, because that's what I'm like wondering, you know, is like
in general, always... every day I get into arguments over fares, over transfers, every single day.
It's almost like it's that's why it's almost like I see it as like TTC workers have like, you know, it's they have a similar disadvantages that the police have, but they have none of the, you know, none of the perks that the police have almost. You don't have the power, right? That's the, you know, so that's the intense part. Like, and they were actually like making a joke of this, that you had your uniform and like.
There was two of us actually, and I don't know why they singled me out, but there was two of us, both in uniform. Two TTC collectors. We both knew each other. We were friends. We were walking together because he was on a break anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So he was going to walk me to Queens and then walk back to college because he had 3.5 hours to kill before the next piece of his shift.
Mm-hmm. So he didn't... He got arrested too, or he...
He got off scot-free. They nailed me left, center, hard, right to the ground. And he kept on walking.
Whoa. Now, this... I guess... Okay, what's gone on since this has happened? Like it's been a few months now. Have you been like I know from reading a recent article, and you can check this out on the Toronto Media Co-op, Toronto Transit Commission worker arrested for going to work by Elroy Yao. It's a letter that you wrote and that's been posted on the Toronto Media Co-op. And you've been off work since.
I've been off work since the day it happened. I was released on the 28th. Which was the Monday, and ever since I was on vacation that week, so it didn't affect anything, but I didn't go to work after that. So basically, my last day of work was the 26th. The 28th. At first, it didn't seem to affect me. A week or two down the road, suddenly I'm in the subway and I'm crying. I can't figure out why. And I'm having a flashback of events. I'm yelling, I'm screaming, I'm like, talking to a person I was in the cell in one of the cells with because I was moved from cell to cell, but he wasn't there. I was just talking to him. So people thought I was absolutely nuts. So that's when I went to see a medical doctor, and he told me, you have post-traumatic syndrome. And he put me on medication at first. He put me on something called clonazepam. It's an anti-anxiety medication, 1 milligram times 3 a day. It was like taking a Tic Tac. It did nothing for me.
Whoa.
So from 3 milligrams a day till today I'm sitting between, depending on the day, 12 to 16 milligrams.
Whoa.
30 milligrams, I'd be in a padded room in a jacket where I can't move. After, I think my second or third, the doctor was aware of my dosage and said, up your dosage and take this much as you need, but do not exceed this amount no matter what, which was 22 milligrams. He goes, just stay below 20. He prescribed me Ativan, which is another anti-anxiety medication, which you take 1 milligram as needed to a maximum of 3 milligrams. I take both medications, and Ativan, I take 6 to 8. I cannot take the subway because of the screeching noises, because one of the most stressful factors of the whole event was the noise. And the subway on the track makes the same noise as the riding in the cages, the opening and closing of the cages. Just so many things set off flashbacks. And you just never know when it happens. And certain stations I know, I mean, I've been with TTC for a while. Like, I'll get off at a certain station, take an Ativan, relax for 5 minutes, then take it to where I want to go. I don't even go near Queen's Park. I get off the stop before, and I walk. I walk along Bloor to Yonge, and then take it down to College. Because I live in the College Park area.
Yeah.
I kind of remember the last time I walked down Queens, down Yonge, between College and, I'd say University Avenue.
That's definitely where it was happening. Well, it was the whole, you know, the intense part with having this post-traumatic stress is that, you know, how much of the Toronto was taken up by this G20. You know, it was all around the downtown core. There was different, you know, G20 scenes that happened. Well, and I can understand like why you're having this stress now, because of how, like, you know, spending 35 hours in jail seems like a lot, especially if they're not giving you any reason for it or didn't you give you any charge or anything. Did you spend it all in the Eastern Avenue Detention Center?
I spent it between five cells all at Eastern Avenue. It wasn't just I thought it was just the one facility where our bus pulled in, the TPS bus pulled in, and people were getting released. I thought they were getting released. The next day I saw them, it's just a huge detention center. And I was taken to a booking sergeant. He's looking at my hot sheet, which is, I guess, technically my arrest sheet. And he's like, the answer was like, I think you were just wrong place, wrong time, buddy. And I told him, listen, I got two dogs at home that haven't been walked and haven't been fed. Like, I need to make a phone call. I need to make arrangements for someone to pick up my dogs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And were you ever able to make a phone call? I know that when they had the media tour, they had this whole wall of like payphones that looked like that. It looked like one room. Were you able to?
From what I heard from everybody that walked by, phones don't work worth shit.
Oh.
They didn't work. So your other option was to see duty counsel. And duty counsel basically just took a few notes. He told me stuff. Like, he told me outright, I don't know why you're not released. You should have been released at you should have been released at 11. This is Sunday now. You should have been released by 11, he goes. They're keeping you here for a reason. He goes, you may want to start thinking about friends. Who can pay post-bail, post-bond? He was explaining this procedure to me. I've never been in trouble with the police. Mm-hmm. I've never even had a speeding ticket. Parking ticket I had, too. But I've never been in trouble with the police, and I've always cooperated with the police.
Okay, how about the TTC? Since we've been talking about the TTC, the situation, I know when I was following the protest on the Saturday, and I was covering it, I was filming it, and then I remember trying to get home on Saturday evening, and the whole TTC was closed down, and then. So what, when you were going to work, was it like, were you being warned that the TTC was there anything going on the Sunday in terms of closing or?
At 2:30, I saw what was happening and I heard on the radio that the TTC was closed. My shift doesn't start till 6 p.m. till 2:25 or 2:35 a.m.
Right.
So I had lots of time. 4:30 p.m., I went to College Park, just downstairs from my place. Mm-hmm. And I called transit control, and asked them, like, hey, here's my options. There's no train. Do you want me to go to Queen's Park, grab my cash, and walk up to St. George? Their answer was pretty much, are you nuts? You're going to walk a briefcase with a lot of money. No, just stay there. Call your division. Check in. Make sure they know you're there. And make sure they get main covered off until you get there. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. And when I received the phone call saying they're at around probably 6:45, seeing that there would be a deadhead train waiting for me at Queen's Park, because we had one deadhead train that was shuttling police and transit police and supervisors in the U part from Bloor to St. George, they said it'll hold for me and take me to St. George. And it was full service from Kipling to Kennedy, so I could have got to main station no problem on a regular train.
Right. So when you're in this situation, you're locked up for all this weekend for the G20 weekend. I guess the shocking thing is that if you had these TTC supervisors out trying to get your situation resolved or trying to get you out, like that it couldn't happen. I guess were there any attempts on the outside? Were people trying to get you out? Did you find out?
Yes,
later,
there was actually. I was the union sent down. Their lawyers, the lawyers were not permitted at Eastern Avenue. They were not permitted entry. My union steward came down twice, once for an hour, once for three. to find out, am I in there? What's his condition? How can we get him out? Here's his schedule. He went to the division to get my schedule. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to be there. They ignored him and said, sorry, get lost, buddy, more or less. It was very, very arrogant. Mm-hmm. So he thought, you know what? I'm going to come back in uniform. So the second time he came back, John came back, he came back in full TTC uniform. And the police were a lot more polite to him, but told him, different police officers, told him, sorry, we can't let you in right now. I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
Well, now, when you're eventually let out, like, how did that process happen? Did they just decide, or like, was there any, like, how did you just get let out then eventually?
In my final cell, probably around 1 a.m. This would have been Monday morning, 1 a.m. Oh. I was already dead tired of sleep. I was a mess. I was fogged. I had no idea what was happening. Gate open. Court officers were there, and I could see their lips move, and they were talking, but I didn't understand. I couldn't hear them. I couldn't comprehend. And then he pointed at me and waved his fingers like, come here, come here, come here. And slowly I came through, because I was kind of napping on and off, trying to sleep on hard concrete. I was freezing, and I wasn't about to take their idea. I mean, the court officer's idea is, if you want to keep warm, the best thing to do is sleep inside the porta potty. Because plastic is warmer than cement.
Oh, no.
It was already embarrassing enough in prison during the first cell with my hands behind my back. Mm-hmm. And I had to ask a guy, listen, can you undo my fly and hold on to my junior and help me pee? And there were others that were too embarrassed, and they just wet themselves and made a mess in their pants, and that was all over the floor. So the next day, when I saw the news and they were showing cells of G20, I actually laughed. I was like, they cleaned that place up pretty good. It looked kind of messy, but it looked like, you know, the way the police would want the public to see it. This is what it looked like. We don't want to show you the cells, the real cells, where there were injured people with blood and bruises all over the floor and urine on the floor, and guys sleeping in it, walking in it, moving it around with their feet, you know, just by walking. We'll just kind of throw a couple of those little crap bread sandwiches and a bunch of styrofoam cups around.
Well, when they're moving you around, like when you're in this holding cell area and they moved you around to a bunch of different cells, why do you think that was? Do you think it was like a psychological thing, or do you think it was because were they cleaning out the cell, or
just to be honest, they had no idea what they were doing. Just
oh no,
because I had nothing to do. I mean, except look out a cage. Mm-hmm. I saw all our stuff were put in property bags, and I watched them. And I knew it was my property bag because I recognized certain items in it. Mm-hmm. I watched her move it from one area to another area, look at her paperwork, take that exact same bag, and move it back to the same area. Within 4 minutes, roughly, a male officer took that same bag, did the exact same thing, and left it there.
Oh.
Minutes later, another, I think it was a female, I can't remember at this point, male or female court officer, took that bag and put that bag back in slot A. And that night, I was arrested Saturday night. It might have even have been Sunday or very early morning, as in 1, 2 a.m. They took the property bag and go, is this yours? Yeah. And they took a picture of me with my property bag.
So when I guess the stuff in the property bag, was that like your transit punch?
That was my watch. That was my belt. That was my shoelaces. That was my anything metal or anything I could have hurt myself or someone else with. Basically, I was in the cell with a pair of shoes with no laces, a pair of pants and a TTC pants, a TTC shirt. That was all I had on. Rings, necklaces, watch, all that was put in property bags, as well as my cell phone.
Well, with all this that's happened, is there anything going on in terms of the legal stuff? That's what I was wondering about. Like, what's
in terms of legal stuff, a lot has happened. We're not just talking psychological trauma, pain, and suffering. That's one area. Mm-hmm. Charter of Rights of Canada freedoms was violated to the extreme during that weekend. Yep. And that'll play a big role in, I'm sure, a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to many attorneys. I have quite a few retainers sitting at my desk at home, and it's just a matter of weeding through of who I trust the most. And most lawyers are doing it for less than they normally would with a normal client.
Right. So this...
Because most would take 40% right off the back. They say so. Mm-hmm. These guys are taking every single... The nine that I have are taking less. And the nine I have will all front up the cost first. All my medical reports, everything. They're like $600 that usually come out of my pocket. They'll front that all up first and take it out when it's settled.
Well, one of these mysteries, one of the conspiracies that I'm still trying to figure out in the G20 is who was really running the show. And so I'm wondering, like, when you're thinking about these lawsuits, like, would this be against Toronto Police, or would this be against the G20, or would this, like, is there a group, like, have you narrowed it down to who's at fault, or?
I actually haven't narrowed down who you would blame for martial law. Because that's exactly what it was. It was martial law. When you arrest a man going to work in a recognized city uniform with people to vouch for him, and you still arrest him and other people just for walking down the street for no apparent reason, to me that's martial law. So who do you sue for martial law? Who would I be suing against? I honestly, at this point, my lawyers, they're not even 100% sure. There would probably be several people that would be called in. It wouldn't just be Toronto Police.
Right. And well, that's why I'm glad that you're getting the word out. And I'm, you know, when I read your letter last week on the Media Co-op, the letter from El Royale, that's when I decided that, you know, I had to try to get you on just to try to get the word out, because, you know, your story is so incredible. And I think, you know, talking about it too, I think helps a bit with the recovery, or I hope it does at least. That's why I want to thank you for appearing on the show. And yeah, and I hope you get better soon. You know, I know you haven't had a great summer, but we're into fall now. So hopefully, you know, seasons can change things, or
yeah.
And I think and I have heard that there's going to be an event coming up too at Ryerson next week, next Wednesday. Hopefully we're going to have some more information on that a bit later on the show too. Thanks a lot, El Royale. Or is there anything else you want to add? Or
yeah, to all those who are suffering what I'm suffering, I mean, see your family doctor, be honest. He's there to help you. He's a professional. Get in with CAMH. There will be withdrawal symptoms if you're on anti-anxiety. And remember, like, there's not a lot of counselors out there and psychologists that are trained in this field for what happened. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. Your best friends are probably your G20 friends you met in prison or you met through G20. And that's why sometimes the G20 meetings are kind of important, because you get to talk to one another and you feel what each other felt.
For real. Yeah, thanks a lot, El Royale. And we're just going to play a track here. This is a track by one of those people in the G20 that was wrongfully accused. Actually, his image was released as a suspected black bloc, but he made this track about how it wasn't him. So this is Peter Bones with a track, G20 Anthem. Word up.
Yo, my friend, can I
CKLN.
Call
you? We'll be back. That word of mouth.
Life is a struggle, you know? Without justice, there's no peace. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. No
justice, no peace. No justice, no peace.
Oh man, not me, man. Hey, you're the liquor for me. Hey, you're the liquor for me. Looking for me. Hey, you're the liquor for me. Hey, you're the liquor for me. In at least Babylon City. In at least Babylon City. Suspect like I'm 900 plus people on Queen G get arrested. I'm so stressed like Toronto's most wanted. Miss must get a little excited. I must have been drunk, maybe a little blunted. I told her I never done it. Over 10,000 people on the streets demonstrating at the summit. Some people said, get with me running from the police. That was the worst weekend on the streets so of Toronto. The government must spend like a billion on this boat. Justice and no peace. They got me on my knees, handcuffed and I bleed. Looking for me on television and my mama's stressing. I can't even believe this until they get me. I never burn a police car. 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 Might they shoot rubber bullets? Police tell them to pull it. I didn't do nothing. What should they have to worry? Not guilty, I'ma tell it. Until they come and get me. Black man on the black block with a black back and a black backpack and a black bandana. Don't move it, don't grab it. I'll ask for Reggie Marshall. I'm caught up in some mix up. People yell at six of them.
It appears Toronto police aren't really protecting their vehicles that closely. What is going on here?
Well, I don't know if it's protecting the vehicles or not. I think it's the security of the people around the area. We have to make sure that when one of our vehicles, like we're seeing right now, are put up flames, that we have to make sure that the security of the people around those vehicles.
Babylon System. This was a track, G20 Anthem. That was Peter Bones. Word up to Peter Bones, known as Legal Stolen from Africa. Real hip hop representing and representing for the G20 topic, G20 situation. Always things going on with the G20, and that's why it's important to speak with Elroy Yao there. And actually, we got a guest here on the phone line. Called in during that interview. Actually, is a man we've been talking about with the G20, about the G20 for a while. You know, since before the G20. Derek, what's up?
What's up, Daniel? How you doing? Nice to be here with you guys tonight.
Nice.
We're having an upcoming event. It's the premier worldwide screening of G20 Toronto Exposed.
Nice.
A documentary that features clips from alternative media. They were there in the streets getting the real news that wasn't broadcasted on the mainstream media. So we have stories from your guest, Mr. Benjamin Yao, who was brutalized. They label his hole puncher for the TTC as a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they labeled a gentleman, he was 57 years old, he had a prosthetic leg. They labeled his leg a weapon as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we have all these facts. We have stuff that wasn't shown on TV. All we seen was the burning police car set on fire. We seen windows getting broken, but we didn't see the ground floor angle of it. So it's coming up on October the 7th. October the 6th. Sorry about that. It's at 7 p.m. We have the street open to the public at Ryerson University. And the address is going to be 17 Gold Street, which is Gold in Victoria. It's right across from the Eden Center.
Right.
We're going to be having free popcorn, and we're going to be having free DVDs handed out to the public. And we're looking at this to go down in history because a lot of people were terrorized at the G20 events. Innocent people were attacked singing, "Oh Canada." Canadian patriots were there, students, young people. We have all the footage that you weren't shown on TV. So it's very important that we spread the truth and that we don't be intimidated by what happened. We stand up for Canada. We stand up for democracy and freedom. We have the Canadian charters and rights. And it states in there that we have freedom of assembly and freedom of speech. And this documentary is vital for everybody to see. It's a grassroots documentary, the first of its kind, being released in Canada. And it's going to be an event that's just going to involve a lot of people that were there at the G20 event. We got the real stories. We got the alternative media, such as Infowars.com, the Real News. We have Press for Truth. All these alternative media sources are vital to what happened. They were there on the ground. So
for real.
I'm just thinking, like, we want to get a lot of Canadians out there that believe in democracy,
mm-hmm.
That want to spread freedom, because what happened here, our city was overhauled. We had $1.2 billion spent of our taxpayers' money, and subsequently, a few days later, on Canada Day, the day that we deemed patriotic, they raised taxes on us. The
right.
HST came into play.
Right, right.
It means more expenses for the average taxpayer, you know? So we see what's happening with the world leaders coming into our cities, and we have Harper on record before G20 saying that we're not going to lose our national sovereignty.
Right, and then we caught him on that.
Then we caught him after the G20 saying on record that we no longer have national sovereignty. So Canadians need to know what's going on.
Yeah.
You can't pay attention to what's on the mainstream media because it's not going to divulge into the truth. This is an event that's going to go down in history. It's the first grassroots documentary produced here in Canada by real Canadians. We're standing up for everybody that was there, that were brutalized. This isn't about the Black Bloc. It's about subsequently everything that happened. We had innocent people being attacked everywhere.
Right.
SWAT teams going in, dragging people out of innocent areas. People were just standing there being respectful, and we captured it all on film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so this event, October the 6th.
So it's next
Arlington
Wednesday.
University, this is next Wednesday.
Yeah, next Wednesday, and I guess the screening's starting at 7?
Screening is starting at 7,
yep. Okay, that's also the start of this show. So I guess I'm still encouraging people, though, to go to check it out and probably do some more G20 stuff on the show, though, just to, just to make sure people who aren't here are still getting some G20 stuff. But is there going to be more stuff before the screening? Was there, have you heard that this, like, is this a connected event with an RSU event or something, Ryerson
Student
Union?
Yeah, Ryerson has a weekly event, and it's called Expressions Against Oppression Week.
Oh.
And during the day, there's an outdoor G20 photo gallery. It's going to have a lot of artwork and photographers that captured some of the images at the G20. That starts at noon until 3 on the Ryerson campus. And then from 3 to 5, there will be an area available for story sharing and first-hand accounts.
Nice.
And that discussion is at the Thomas Lounge, which is the student center on Ryerson campus.
Nice, yes. And that's the same center that CKLN's located. So that's interesting. And, you know, Derek, we've had you in the studio talking about the G20 before the G20, and it sounds like you got some sirens going on.
Yeah, so, I can hear them right now, right outside my condo.
Right. And so what I was going to ask you about, though, because we played a clip a few weeks ago, an audio clip of you, your explanation of what happened outside of your condo. It was sort of connected to the G20, and I was just wondering if you had any comments on that. Like, when you had an ID check in August that seemed like a G20 flashback. What was that?
Yeah, this was actually 2 months after G20, and if I could share that with your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
See, I was never an activist or a protester. I'm a citizen of Toronto. I live downtown, right beside the Eaton Center. And I went out there to document what was going on. And I got interviewed on City TV about a $45 million lawsuit about what happened with the mass arrest at Queen of Spadina. So they asked me some questions, and I was talking about the amputee, John Prune, and how his leg got ripped off and labeled a weapon. And I was upset by that because as a Canadian, I don't want to see anybody treated that way. A 57-year-old man who works for Revenue Canada has rights, like we all do. We're all Canadians. So I got interviewed, and 2 months later, I'm outside my condo, and a police car pulls up to me, and he ID checks me, says that I'm loitering in front of my own condominium. Now, what happens is I give him the identification. He assaults me. So then I'm intimidated because I've seen those snatch and grab tactics during G20. I've seen a lot of innocent people being arrested.
Right.
And I went to get help from my security guard inside my own building. So we have the footage. We have the footage of 12, believe it or not, 12 police officers came after me. The most intimidating experience I've ever had. And I felt like it was because I was speaking out in public. And I have a strong voice. And I believe we have freedoms and democracies in this country. And we got to stand up for what we believe in. Without that, who are we? We're not going to be slaves to this police brutality that happened. And what happened was I got all the footage on the security cameras. So if somebody wanted to go into YouTube,
right,
and just type in 12 cops versus one. That's all you got to put, 12 cops versus one. You'll see my story. You'll see me on CP24 being interviewed. And then subsequently, 2 months later, like it was 10 days after I did that interview, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So 10 days after I did the interview for City TV, I was just shocked. I was just shocked that they would use that much force to come after me. And I wasn't arrested. They threw me up against the police cruiser, 12 cops surrounding me. And they just started making derogatory statements that I am a drug addict, that I'm an alcoholic, and that I should be in a mental institution. And I just kept to myself, and I didn't say anything. I was thinking they were going to beat me up or something. It was just very intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
But they picked the wrong guy.
Mm-hmm.
They picked the wrong guy because, you know what? We're doing this documentary. This documentary is groundbreaking. It's the first grassroots documentary.
Yeah.
And we're showing the truth. Because the truth matters. The truth will live forever. And this G20 event, this summit, went down in history. And there's a lot of stuff that the mainstream media didn't portray. People don't know what really happened. They just see the cars being set on fire, black bloc going through the street, but there's more to the story. So that's why on October the 6th, 7 p.m., right across from the Eaton Center, Dundas Square, we got the whole street open for the public to come out, have some free popcorn. We got breakdancers,
nice.
We got girls, G20 girls, going to be handing out free DVDs to everybody. We're doing this all out of our pocket. It's out of our pocket. We spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars to get this set up.
Nice.
And we just want people that are real Canadians to be out there, that really want to know the real news, that aren't satisfied with the commercial aspect of mainstream media, where they're always trying to sell you something. And you have to understand that the media works on behalf of the police. So a lot of their stories comes from the police department. So there's some stories like the story of John Prune, who had his leg ripped off. They're not going to show that on TV, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. I had to speak about it. I had to get his story out.
Yeah,
and Daniel, you were
a
great advocate of being on the radio show, 88.1, and getting his story out there.
Exactly.
And it's people like us that are in the alternative media that makes a difference, because we see our city, how it's changing.
Yeah.
We see more taxes. We see these summits coming into our city. We see fences dividing the elite from the people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the 1960s and 70s, leaders like Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, they would walk amongst the people, and people would welcome them into the city.
Mm-hmm.
So I ask, why has that changed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why did they have to hire 20,000 police officers? Well, I guess we got an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to hear us. They just want to close themselves off from us. We're not violent. We just want to speak out and be heard.
Exactly. Yeah, that's
so
the importance of these
on.
Events. And that's why I'm glad we're getting the evidence out. The evidence is on YouTube. You can check out thesecretstory.ca. And you can check out G20 Exposed, the screening, coming up next week, next Wednesday. And, Derek, thanks a lot for calling in.
Thank you so much, Daniel.
All right, peace. And that was Derek. They're talking about G20, more info on the G20, all the stuff that's gone on. It definitely hasn't ended yet. It hasn't ended yet. This though, is a we just got to change gears in the show here because we're running a bit low on time. Run into the home stretch of the show, and I just wanted to make sure that we get in our interview here on a different topic. This is an interview about the Manifesto Festival. Manifesto Festival took place on the weekend. It's always a major event. Third weekend in September. This year, it was at the Dundas Square, not far from here. But actually, there's events going on all weekend. The main event was at Dundas Square, I should say. But on Saturday, last Saturday, there was an event right here on Ryerson campus. It was a speakers event, speaker series, So Much Things to Say speaker series, I think co-presented by the Manifesto and the Ryerson Students Union, took place in L72. And right now, I got a clip, actually, of one of the speakers from this event. And I'm going to play this one now. This one is a clip of speaker Ivan Evidante, who is a record executive, and without any further ado, here is that clip speaking about Manifesto. Word up, we'll be right back.
Make some noise. Now that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. I feed off feedback. Now let's go. Manifesto, make some noise.
Please welcome Ivan Big Eyes Evidante.
Yeah, my name is Ivan, and you know it's an honor for me to be able to speak here at the Manifesto series here. The So Much to Say. When Che first approached me about it, you know, he was like, Ivan, you got to come in, and you got to talk about this stuff, and you just got to talk. And the first thing that kind of came to my head was like, you know what, like I don't really feel like talking about record label, Universal stuff. I'd rather more talk about sort of stuff that kind of I did before. I'm born to immigrants who moved here from the Philippines in the early 70s. And it was like in the early 80s and like I think around maybe like 83 or 84 where I sort of, 84 I'd say, where I really got introduced to hip hop, I'd say. And for a lot of people who probably know, like I said, I'm Filipino, and Filipinos, if I can just say, we have always been into like dancing or singing karaoke or like anything. We've always, or DJing. It's like, I don't know what it is. It's in our blood. And, you know, I was one of those guys who had, you know, and another thing, I don't know if we have any Filipinos in the building, but
yes, we do.
Well, then you'll know. Filipinos, I don't know if it's just us, but we always have this one uncle who's like, maybe about like 7 years older than you, you know, so we always call him the young uncle. Right, so I had one of those, and he was sort of, he was kind of a DJ, I don't know if he really was a DJ, but he always had his mixtapes in his car, and he would be like playing them in his car, and he would play like songs. It was then during this time, I mean, the music was more on that, kind of like freestyle, like, you know, Shannon, Let the Music Play, Lisa Lisa and the Cult Jam, Africa Mumbata, Looking for the Perfect Beat. And it was sort of like that kind of freestyle, electro-fast kind of, you know, that kind of sound. And I don't know, I just, that was sort of my first introduction to it. And then the movie Beat Street came out. And I don't know if anybody's seen Beat Street, right? Like, that movie changed my life. Like, honestly, Beat Street and Breakin'. And it was funny for me because, you know, Breakin', and I was like 8, 9 at the time. And mind you, I grew up in the West End. I grew up in the Jane and Dundas area, and that neighborhood that was constantly surrounded by hip hop music. And during those times in those 80s, it was like, you know, we didn't have Flow here, you know, and we had CKLN, you know, we had those stations, and it was actually right downstairs. It's the craziest thing. That's right downstairs in this building, and Ron Nelson's Fantastic Voyage is sort of like my first sort of like, oh my gosh, I can hear this on the radio. And another great show that we had here was Dave Ahmad's Dave's Dance Music. So I know some of you guys might be familiar with that. And I would listen to like, and during the time when Ron Nelson was doing the show, he'd have like guest DJs come in. And one of those DJs was DJ X. Does everybody know DJ X? I know there's gotta be a lot of people who know the Power Moon show. Okay. This guy was a legend in my book as well, because not only was he a great DJ, this man could could scratch. Like, he was like a turntablist of some sort. He was amazing. And in those days too, and this is kind of going a little old school, 1989 was the year that, like, let your backbone slide just completely changed everything. During that time is sort of when I started getting my interest in trying to, I wanted to become a DJ. Here's how it works. So I start DJing parties, and I wasn't like the club DJ who'd come into the party and just start scratching, but we always tried to include that in the, you know, somewhere just to kind of spice it up and make it a little bit cooler, especially with mixtapes and so forth. So now we're looking at 1992, and the movie Juice came out. And with that movie, again, kind of changed my life, and it, you know, I started to look at the turntable scene a little bit more and started to gain a real interest in it. And at that time, you know, there were other events that were happening around the city. Monster Jam, Ron Nelson used to have Monster Jam, used to put that on. There was CHRY used to do the Metro Mix-Off, which was a DJ competition as well. And they would have the DMCs as well still, but it was DJs like that sort of that I really, really looked up to in those days were DJs like DJ Grouch, D Scratch, DJ Apollo. These were some of like the legendary battle DJs from that sort of time. I started DJing, you know, different parties and stuff, and I had hooked up with a breakdance crew called Bag of Tricks. Yeah, is that anybody familiar with Bag of Tricks? We go down to New York, we go to the Rocksteady anniversary, and I'm just, because I know I'm limited for time and there's so much more to say, but we go to the Rocksteady anniversary, and this honestly changed my life again. It was a free jam outside. And you know who was performing? Let me tell you who was performing. Wu-Tang Clan. Free, okay? Matt isn't. Channel Live. The Invisible Scratch Pickles. Okay? The list went on. And then on top of that, you had circles of B-boys that were, this is in a basketball court. Okay? This was free. We had a circle of B-boys there. Circle of graffiti writers comparing like their books. And it totally, I was like, you know what? This is incredible. This is like hip-hop. This was real hip-hop in one place. I came back to Toronto saying, you know what? I gotta do something like that. And I threw this party called Spontaneous, and it was at Our Lady of Lebanon Church at Parkdale, right there, Queen and Triller Ave. And can I tell you, I charged $2 to get in. $2 for women, I think it was $5 for guys. And it was the most rammed party I had ever thrown. I think to this day, I made more money at that party than I've ever, like, to this day. So anyways, what I kept doing is every year I would keep going back to New York, and I was just so inspired by, you know, the culture and how people were just living it, like, for real out there. You know, the parties, the numbers started getting bigger, and I wanted to add value to my parties, give something to people to walk away with. So what I started doing was I noticed that on the streets, street teams were really starting to come up. And if you guys remember back in Toronto, BMG had the best, I don't, hands down. So I used to invite street teams out to my parties, and it was crazy. You know, I would just invite them out for free, come on in, and the people who come to my parties would walk out with something, you know, something free, you know, like a poster or a sample or whatnot. So at that time, it was kind of cool to get free things walking out of a party. I also took it upon myself to start cold calling record labels, because the whole time I was a DJ, right? So I would cold call record labels to get free servicing. And one day I walked into this, it was Arista Records, and Arista at the time distributed Bad Boy Records now. So we're kind of going through years here and stuff. And I walked into this gentleman's office, who his name is Pierre, and I never forget this. I remember walking into his office and seeing like a big poster of Biggie Smalls. I remember seeing like he had TV speakers in his office, and I said to myself, you know, one day I'm going to do this. I think, like, you know, from being a DJ and coming, I totally want to get involved in behind the scenes stuff. So came back to Toronto, and at this time there was my man Kano, who actually now lives in Australia. He had this sort of company called Noise. And what it was like a group of individuals that all sort of worked for street teams, but they worked for different labels. And what happened was, so it was kind of like a union, but they all worked for different, like I said, different companies. So I kind of joined them, and it was like Thrust was on that team. Frankenstein, Frankie Anna was on that team. It was just a bunch of people, like great, great people. And what happened was labels started getting mad, because they were like, you know what, you can't have, you know, one company running all the stuff for all of the labels, because we don't want them to know what we do. So that's when PolyGram, which was Def Jam at the time, said, well, we want one person that's going to work exclusively for us. And just got a job, right? It was me, right? So I got this job at there, and it was just like, again, it was a street team position, just kind of doing what I do. And one thing when I walked into the label was I explained to them that, you know, as much as I really wanted to get my foot in the door, I was never going to stop what I was doing before, which is that sort of entrepreneurial side of me, throwing parties. Once I got my foot in the door, the key thing is that I just wanted to keep challenging myself, keep learning. And so I would walk around that building, ask a lot of questions. I would get on conference calls. I wanted to find out what the person in Montreal was doing, the person in Vancouver was doing. I slowly built my way up, and then finally, you know, again, taking all of the experiences that I had from throwing parties, I sort of proposed a lot of this stuff to Universal, and we slowly started building a department. Next thing you know, we built this department called Universal Urban. And for 8 years, I ended up being the director of that department. And then in 2007, they actually decided that they wanted to create a rock department as well that was sort of a template of the urban department. So I helped them sort of build the template for this rock department, and then a year later they said, you know what, Ives, screw that. We're going to put the entire thing together and you're going to run the whole thing. So it now became a lifestyle department where I was running the rock and the urban department. So that's what I do today. I owe it to the people who've come before me, and there's too many to name, and I also owe it to the people that have come after me. People like Che who are doing, you know, stuff that I've been attempting to do for a while. And going back to the turntable scene, which I have to say, I also managed a DJ by the name of DJ Dopey. And in the 2003, he won the world championship. So during that time, I also got to travel a lot, see, meet different people from different parts of the world. At that time, I had met a duo from Detroit named Frank and Dang, who I had signed as well to my label. And having learned what I learned, you know, and kept, you know, wanting to learn more, I managed to get myself a deal at Universal. It's kind of weird, right? But I was able to do that and put out some records. And here I am today. And I wish I could talk more because I do have so much things to say. But I hope you learned a little something today. And thank you so, so much for that.
Word up. Word of Mouth Wednesday. That was the voice there of Ivan Evidante speaking about his past experience in the hip-hop community, the hip-hop culture, and his work on, I guess he's working for the record label Universal now, record executive, but he's, you know, throughout the hip-hop history. He even mentioned CKLN. Shout out to the original CKLN in the basement of Ryerson, right near where he was speaking on that So Much Things to Say speaker series. Took place on Saturday. It was a open public event right here on Ryerson campus, so that's one of the reasons I played it. And another one, of course, is also just to shout out the Real Hip Hop and the Manifesto.ca. You can check out the Manifesto Festival next year. It'll be the 5th anniversary. This was the 4th anniversary this year. So that was it was a dope weekend. It was an awesome festival. And maybe we're going to play some more. I got the speech from Maestro. Might play a few clips of that one next week, maybe. You know, more on that going on, and also going on right now in Toronto, major race for mayor going on. So we're going to get back into that topic next week as well. We'll be focusing on the G20 because of that G20 event at Ryerson, Expressions of Oppression, coming up next Wednesday. But also just mentioning the make some noise. The Manifesto Festival started at City Hall in 2007 was the first one. And City Hall is changing because of the race for mayor is a major topic. We've interviewed in the past candidates like Joe Pantolone, Rocco Rossi, Rob Ford, Selwyn Firth, BJ Sarma, Kevin Clark, Dan Walker, Mark State, Rocco Champong, some of the many candidates for mayor. And we're going to be, you know, talking about that race and talking about what's going on in the city. Hopefully going to have some more guests on before the election day as well. Stay tuned as well for our next show. My name's Daniel Libby. I've been hosting Word of Mouth for a while, hosted the whole show today, and hosted the last hour as well as the middle of the Middle Passage, filling in there for Victor Baines Marshall. Shout outs to Victor Baines Marshall, who was watching the Cito Gaston finale. So shout outs, tribute to Cito Gaston, Toronto Blue Jays. And that's it for the Word of Mouth Wednesday for the 29th of September. Stay tuned for the Blues Dr. Julie Hill with the Blue Remedy to cure your music ills. Take the CKLN pill. Keep it chill. Word out. Keep it real. Peace.